It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. Welcome back to another great week of Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock. In studio, I have Mr. Dan Guggenkopf. Now, Mr. Guggenkopf is going to help us with understanding the laws behind the census. Now, we had this Saturday, we had an event up at Rock Springs. It's north of Phoenix, about 30, 40 miles out in the Lone Prairie and the foothills of the Bradshaw Mountains, and it's very beautiful, especially this time of year. And they have an event called Hogs in Heat, which is a big barbecue competition and so on up there. So we went up there and had fun right after we did the breakfast club in the morning. So they took care of us. We had a pretty good-sized crowd there, and we were rock and rolling and whatnot, and we were going over a lot of the stuff of the past month. You know, the breakfast club is really a social thing. It's a eat, meet, and retreat. You know, they used to make fun of it. I'm like, you know what? Can we have an eat, meet, and retreat? Because we're, like, busy all the time. We need to eat, meet, and retreat and go chill. So we just, you know, it's just everybody comes in with all their updates of the stuff they've been doing and getting everybody up to speed on what's happening and what's going to happen over the next month, and we enjoy each other's company. And it's 40th year. Been around a long time. Well, part of that was Mr. Guggenkopf coming up. He's been a longtime activist for, you know, especially on election fraud and so on. We may get into that a little bit today. But the main thing that he's focused on, the census thing. I mean, some guy in his crawl, man. He's just like, no, I want to understand everything. And he can. And he did. And he made a short presentation. I asked that he come and share this with you. And, you know, Don and I opened up our census here on the show, and we just said, you know what, it's $100, the penalty, for me not answering the one question I got to answer. Well, it says each question. Then you got to ask, all right, which questions do I got to answer? Well, you know, how many people are here? Well, if I don't answer that? Well, they're going to come visit me, and I'll go, hi, God, you know, thanks. Did you come pick up my check? You know, wait a minute, let me get my video camera. So we'll have some fun with it. Of course, they'll want to prosecute you and go after you, and especially if anybody... It's like taxes, you know. If you're not paying your tax or you just don't file or whatever, you know, it's not likely that they're going to mess with you if you're, you know, it costs them more than whatever they're going to get out of you. It's when you start teaching people. Man, they don't like anybody influencing anybody. So you do that, then here they come. So today we're going to get in trouble. We're going to have Mr. Guggenkopf going to tell us all what's what. And the thing that I'm seeing is it's more than just they know. You think they don't know where any and everybody is at every address? There are certain little things, you know, not everybody fills out their Facebook page. Not everybody tells you everything about their ethnicity, how much money they make, how long they spend in rush hour traffic, where do they go to shop, how far do they travel to take their kid to school, how, you know, whether they spank their kids or not. I mean, you know, these are the, oh, whether they got a bunch of equity in their home, it's owned free and clear. Heck, that's on the short form. You know, you have like less than 10 questions and you got, they want to know if you own your home outright. I'm like, what is this, a RICO thing? We need to know who to target. Yeah, he made the list. That boy's got some equity. We need to get him first. Oh, man. Well, that's what we're going to be talking about. We come back here on Declare Your Independence. We're going to, you know, there's somebody actually took the time and did some studying on this census thing. You know, that's cool. And we'll share it with you. We'll be right back.
There are those that just want to be left alone.
and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Yeah, they're coming. They're coming. And they got an acorn hat on. And they're going to be at your front door with their GPS marking you. And they're going to say, yo, sup? You know, we're marking within 30 feet of where you enter your dwelling with a little GPS thing. And who's here? And how many's here? And what's their persuasion? You know, in many different ways. Because before it used to be, you know, us versus them was a lot easier. I mean, they just, you know, whip your trousers down. Are you circumcised? Yeah, I mean, it was something like that. Then it's like, I don't know. What particular kind of Christian are you? Okay. We got standards. You know, we got a rack over here for some people. Oh. And then if you, I don't know, that nose is looking a little prominent there. You know, we got a cattle car for you. All right. This is done with census. Since biblical times, they take a census. Why? What possible reason? Especially, think about it. If you have the creation of a government that is there to represent individual rights, does that change when you have twice as many people, half as many people? How does that change? What the number of people changes what? So they go, all right, well, we want representation in this body. Now, the Articles of Confederation was the states worried about. That's their own thing. You know, each state, regardless of size, had equal representation in whatever affected that state amongst the other states, and states being states, and we're all sovereign states. It's all good. Oh, heck no. We got to have a collective. We got to have, I mean, even John Adams was wanting to make George Washington king. They don't tell you that part in school, do they? You know, Hamilton is all about the central bank thing. It was guys like Jefferson that's going, no, Patrick Henry, Thomas Paine. They're going, oh, heck no. I see what you're doing, you scumbag little snots. Okay? So what they did is that when they did the Constitution, what's one of the first things they want to do? Got to count the people. Why? Well, allocate representation, of course. Well, that was left up to jurisdictions in, you know, it's like federal marshals. You know, you just go out and count kind of, you know, this many. All right? Well, then they start finding out that they can get more information because the Census Bureau is part of the Commerce. Commerce is part of Census, okay? And they had the Census before, so Department of Commerce. So what are you? You're an asset. You're a line in a spreadsheet, man. You know, and they allocate different values to different people. And I'll tell you this. I mean, it happens like you want to be an immigrant to New Zealand. You know, they have a point system, and they change the points. Well, it takes 20 points to get in. Oh, it's 30 points to get in. It's 40 points to get in, and you get points based on whatever. One thing is that if you are below a certain age, you get certain points. If you have a certain education, you get certain points. If you have so much money in the bank, you have certain points. Your net value is, you know, blah, 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 all these points. Well, guess what? You're 70 years old, you get negative points. And here in the United States, you think you're going to get, you know, positive points for being, let's see, 65-year-old Hispanic heritage gay with, well, I don't know, gay might get you extra points. But anyway, so, I mean, you can see what I mean. You follow a certain category, oh, man, we're shipping you somewhere. Where? I don't know, but you're not getting any goodies. So this kind of mentality of counting people is just, I mean, it's just the beginning of bad stuff. And throughout history, it's always been bad stuff. The IBM punch cards, that's where IBM gets a lot of hassle for the Holocaust. And regardless of what your position is on the Holocaust, bottom line was this. Germans love having punch cards. And put right, yes, I'm proud Juden. Yes, absolutely. Right here. Here I am. Knight of Broken Glass. Here they go. Which shops do they target? Which people they pull out of their house? Which what were the people that they took and confiscated all their nice homes and goodies and stuff? Get on the cattle car. We're going to send you this, this paradise. I'm going to send you over here to something. We'll take care of it. We'll settle up later. Oh, can I have the gold in your teeth? I saw pictures. What was really stark is just all the eyeglasses. You had a big mound that was 6 feet high of just eyeglasses. What does that tell you? You know, so how do they do this stuff? Well, why is because they can. I mean, you know, what enables them, IBM did as part of their census, they came up with IBM punch cards for everyone. And you, I got a movie. It was, who sent it to me? Carol Asher, I think, works with Jack McLam. Yeah, no, she sent it to me. Some people that's on this network had produced it. It sat there for a week or two, but I got to it. You know, and I watched it. I'm going, yeah, I've heard this stuff, you know, but it's stark to see it in action, how they did it. Well, is IBM to blame? They made a machine, so on, and fine-tuned it and got it just right and did everything for the Nazi regime. Is IBM to blame? Well, they profited. And you think these Homeland Security guys now aren't probably, oh, they got big giant cap. Ooh, we're going to spend all our money. Why? What is coming? Did they use the census to round up Japanese Americans? Of course they did. Let me think. What's the word? Okay. So now we're looking at a situation where they're going to be doing it again. But what's the focus now? There's two on the short form. It's not just whether you're Hispanic. It's what kind of Hispanic. Are you from Argentina? Are you from Uruguay? Are you from, you know, wherever? Costa Rica, Mexico, Nicaragua, Bolivia, Venezuela? I mean, where are you from? So there's bad guys in charge. On the top of the front page of Freedom's Phoenix right now, you'll see Tea Party Express shuns We Are Change. We Are Change out of Utah went around, and then We Are Change everywhere. You got We Are Change Arizona. We are just, you know, young guys with video cameras, you know, asking questions, demanding answers. And most of it started on the 9/11 stuff, but they started seeing this threat of corruption and deceit. So they're following the Tea Party Express around, going, okay, who funds these buses? I got, it's like a rock concert. Where's the money come? Oh, from people just like you. Right. And then the CNN Express, they were following it too. What? So this is, you know, it's interesting. Then when you have people with signs up, they hold their own sign. Oh, that's not the message you want to say. You can't have that sign. Well, is it a public event or not? If you got, you get an officer, come over here and make me leave while I'm videotaping them, I'm all over it. So they come over. Well, we can't make you, but they would like, yeah, well, you know, nice try. So this is, you know, exposing without the internet, without this kind of information, this stuff would never get exposed. It hasn't throughout human history. It was always what the court jester said. It was what the town crier said that got paid for by the man. That's changing. What do we do? Well, let me introduce you to Dan Guttenkopf. Guttenkopf has been he and his twin brother, Danny, they've been, kicking butt for 15 years, I guess, at least. I've known these guys. They've been involved with the Breakfast Club, used to videotape a lot of it all the time. They really focused on election law and kind of we all worked together on various different things, and we'll get into that. But he's going to focus on the census, and he's a legal researcher. I mean, he's one of these guys that actually goes to the law library and prints out the documents and looks at what the law is, looks at what's called shepherdizing. You go and you see what cases affected current law. You know, what precedents do you have? What was it before that and before that? And what did the judges say? And why did they say it? And who are the prosecutors? And what was the thing at issue? What was the real on-point subject that was being debated instead of just taking a line out? I mean, this kind of research, you know, hardly anybody does. Well, Dan does. What did you find out, Dan?
A lot of interesting information. You know, years ago, Ernie, when I first got involved in studying legal research, it became apparent that as we were losing more and more of our freedoms, it became more and more necessary to learn what the law actually says and to learn what our rights are. Because if you don't know what your rights are, you have no rights. So in terms of the census, it's very interesting. There's a very long history of especially these particular questions that are being asked here. Going clear back to 1790, a lot of these same questions were asked. But the fact that they were asked back then doesn't mean necessarily that there was constitutional authority for these questions. And what the Census Bureau is doing when they bring particular prosecution cases up, they will cite what's called the Necessary and Proper Clause. So even though the only mandate in terms of the census is to basically say how many people are there living or residing at that residence. They cite the necessary and proper clause as their authority to ask all these other questions.
Okay, the necessary and proper clause. Necessary and proper clause of what? From where that says what?
Well, for administering government, and I need to do some further research into that, but it's interesting. There's a case that I think is particularly on point, the Morales case.
Okay, Morales case, music, that means you got to shut up. We'll be back in just a little bit with Dan Guttenkopf, who's going to tell us about necessary and proper. We'll start looking it up here a little bit in the break here, because I keep hearing this all the time, and I want to know where that comes from. Says who? Do I get to pick what's necessary and proper for me? Who decides that? I don't know. Let's get at the words. We'll be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free. I want to break free.
God knows, man, all I want to do is to break free. Well, we got this necessary and proper clause. I keep hearing this, yak, yak, yak. You know what I love? I really like this one thing, man. This one thing is really cool. The internet. Yay, I want to push the truth button. Here we go. Yeah, this is good. Now, I get a pen and paper on this one. Necessary and proper clause. And you keep, this is where the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists, the Anti-Federalists, they knew what was going on. They, Thomas Paine and Patrick Henry and Jefferson, these guys. And then later, I think Madison started to, maybe this didn't go the way I thought. And this is, the arguments they had back and forth, because a bunch of lawyers, it was a vast majority of lawyers that were in the Continental Congress, the Declaration of Independence, but the Constitutional Convention, guess who wrote that thing? Lawyers. What did they want? They wanted power. They wanted centralized power. They wanted authority, and they wanted one thing above all else, control the money. Okay? You don't think so? Listen to this. The necessary and proper clause, also known as the elastic clause, the basket clause, the coefficient clause, and the sweeping clause, is the provision in Article 1 of the United States Constitution, Section 8, Clause 18. The Congress shall have, and this is the U.S. Constitution, okay? The Congress shall have power to make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution the foregoing powers and all other powers. All other powers vested by this Constitution in the government of the United States or in any department or officer thereof. Okay? What this says is that Congress has the power, whatever they deem necessary and proper for carrying into execution the powers granted to it by the Constitution. Okay? Well, you say it's limited, right? Well, you can only do this, 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 and this. And they're going, well, you know what? We say that regulating commerce, taxation, eminent domain, all these kind of things, well, we got a bunch of laws we got to pass to be able to do that. And if I was king of the world, I don't know what else I'd need. I get access to your money, every transaction you have, buy and sell. And if I want that land for whatever I want to do with it for the king's men, I can take that too. And I'm going, did they leave anything out? I was just wondering, So the early controversy was this. The clause provoked controversy during discussions of the proposed Constitution. Okay, now this is, they hadn't ratified it yet. It's already, coming under scrutiny. And its inclusion became a focal point of criticism for those opposed to the Constitution's ratification, while anti-federalists expressed concern that the clause would grant the federal government boundless power. Federalist argued that the clause would only permit execution of power already granted by the Constitution. Okay? So they're saying, look, it only is going to give us the power to enact, Congress to enact all these laws to do these specific things in the Constitution that says that we can do. Now, how we interpret what it says we could do, that's a whole nother thing. And that's what we got our employees over here in the black robes to talk about. We're going to let our boys decide whether it was okay or not. You see where this is going, right? Alexander Hamilton spoke vigorously for the second interpretation. That only allows us to do what's already granted. In the Federalist Papers, as part of his argument for why the federal government required the powers of taxation, at this time, James Madison concurred with Hamilton, arguing in Federalist No. 44 that without this clause, the Constitution would be a dead letter. At the Virginia Ratifying Convention, Patrick Henry, remember we talked about Patrick Henry speaking for 4 hours for the state legislature? He was governor at the time, and he's going, oh, heck no, I know what these guys are doing. I smell a rat. Patrick Henry took the opposing view, saying that the clause would lead to limitless federal power that would inevitably menace civil liberties. Then it's done. They do the Bill of Rights. They get it in. They pass it anyway. So for the several decades after the Constitution was ratified, the interpretation of the necessary and proper clause continued to be a powerful bone of contention between the Democrat-Republican Party and the Federalist Party and several other political parties in the United States. The first practical example of this contention came in 1791. I mean, this is like right after they got ratified and everything. Came in 1791 when Hamilton used the clause to defend the constitutionality of the creation of the First Bank of the United States. It's always about the money. I keep telling you guys, the first federal bank in the new nation's history. Concerned that moneyed northern aristocrats would take advantage of the bank to exploit the South, Madison now argued that Congress lacked the constitutional authority to charter a bank. Hamilton argued that the bank was a reasonable means of carrying out powers related to taxation and the borrowing of funds, claiming the clause applied to activities reasonably related to constitutional powers, not just those that were absolutely necessary to carry out said powers. You give them an inch, they take a parsec, okay? This is, if you read the history of the Hologram of Liberty by Boston Tea Party, this is on what really happened at the Constitutional Committee, what was really going on. It has always been about central banking. Always. Always, 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 always follow the money. Well, you know, the Bill of Rights kind of held them off for, you know, a few days. But, you know, I'm telling you, you know, this is where we're going. Census? Why? Why? What do we need? What's going on? Well, we're going to find out when we come back with Dan Guttenkopf.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
I feel the weight of the world on my shoulder. As I'm getting older, your people get colder. Most of us only care about money making. Selfishness got us following the wrong direction. Wrong information always shown by the media. Negative images is the main criteria. Infecting the young minds faster than bacteria. Kids wanna act like what they see in the cinema. Whatever happened to the values of humanity? Whatever happened to the fairness and equality? Instead of spreading love, we're spreading animosity. Lack of understanding leading us away from unity. That's the reason why sometimes I'm feeling under. That's the reason why sometimes I'm feeling down. It's no wonder why sometimes I'm feeling under. Gotta keep my faith alive till love is found. Now ask yourself,
where is the love? Where is the love?
Oh, the love's right here. Oh, Dan Guttenkopf and Ernest Hancock got some love for you. We're going to share with you. We're going to find that there is some truth in the love that we have for each other. And to be able to express it, be able to communicate with each other, be able to have the same language, to understand what's going on, we just need some information. I mean, you know, what's up? And we're talking about the necessary and proper. He brought this up because I hear it all the time. And I'm like, necessary and proper what? To do what? So I go, all right, let's play some internet. I go to Wikipedia, necessary and proper clause. What am I finding out? Yeah, same old stuff we always knew. It's, you know, Congress shall have the power. Well, it's always about the power. That's why you hear me say the U.S. Constitution might as well be called a communist manifesto. Okay? The only thing that makes the Constitution worth a dang is the Bill of Rights. And the Constitution had absolutely nothing to do with the Declaration of Independence. Nothing. Not even the same. There was Articles of Confederation between the two, you know, which was doing just fine, but not for them. They needed to have a collective power, that collective power to tax, the collective power to take your property away from you if they wanted it, the collective power to regulate everything you buy and sell. What the hell else did they need? I don't know, is there something else? I mean, what else is there? Because that's all the wealth that comes in. It's just a funnel for them. Well, this necessary and proper thing, you know, it became a big contention. You know, it's one of the deals Patrick Henry is going on about. No. Even Madison changed his mind later after he saw what Hamilton did. And it was all about what? Creating the first bank of the United States. That was the point from the beginning. Hello? You woke up yet? You starting to get it? So I go up, they'll say, Ernie, I can't believe you say the Constitution is a communist manifesto. Oh my God, heavens to Murgatroyd. Ask me to detail why. I dare you. You know, so I'm like, I have no problem doing this because I know what the history is of this and why they did it, how it manifested to where we are now. The Declaration, that's why this show is Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hand. You cannot be independent if you're dependent. And what was the thing in Declaration of Independence? What did it say? It said, this is how you determine when a government is bad. When it's not defending individual rights, it is your right, it is your duty to alter or abolish. Well, that's what's been going on. People are like, hey, can we alter it? Probably not. Can we abolish it? Probably not. Can we ignore it? We don't want you doing that because then we wouldn't get any money. So maybe that's the way to go. We just go, you know what? I'm just trading with my neighbor and growing my own food and chickens, and we'll just do that for a few years and you just go away anyway. I don't know. We'll talk about it. It's called agorism. Agora, you know, Greek for marketplace. And agorism is kind of this libertarian, you know, I'm just going to sit here for a couple of years and chill, you know, just survive and see what happens. Now, that's an interesting, you know, it's like, you know, putting daisies in gun barrels if they happen to show up with them. But what else do? You go fight them. You go beat them up. You blast your way into Washington, D.C. and sit in the throne and say, yeah, the revolution is won. We're in charge now. Then they got a bunch of guys with guns sitting there, you know, wearing, you know, berets and have beards and everything saying they're in charge of me now. I'm like, yay. Well, that's a step up. Not. So, you know what? We need to understand these things. So, all right. Dan Guttenkopf, give me your spiel, man. What'd you find out on the census?
I found out that there are certain laws that are protecting of individuals, and it's important to know what those laws are. And it's also important to know what arguments the government makes so you don't make those arguments. And some of the things that can help the individuals are the Paperwork Reduction Act, which says that they've got to cite an Office of Management and Budget number. And if it's not cited on the form, then they don't have any right to ask that question. There can be no penalty for you refusing to answer that if it doesn't have an OMB number on it.
Okay, time out. Okay, first thing, this is what you're saying. You're saying part of the paperwork reduction, blah, 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 government thing did. I remember, that's like in Reagan years or something, wasn't it? You know, so they passed this law saying that, you know, we're going to streamline government for you. We're going to make it, you know, if there's a form, it's going to have a number on it so you can reference it and what your obligations are to this form. And it doesn't count if it doesn't have this number on the form, right?
Correct.
So here comes the census thing. Does it have a number on the form?
On my form, it did, and it had an expiration date. But the important point is to notice one of the other provisions of that law, and that is if they don't give you also a notice that says if that number is not included on the form, then there can be no penalty for not answering that.
Okay, so part of this act was not only do they have to have the number on the form, they have to have a little bit of ink saying that this number has to be on the form.
That's correct.
So they didn't do that part.
They didn't do that part.
Oh, see, you're one of them. Okay, so this is my point. Let's assume that they had the number, okay? Is there an obligation still for me to do? And where's the law? And who has the jurisdiction over me saying I got to? Because now you're doing technicality stuff. You know, that's fine. That's cool. You know, it's like, that's a defense. I go, hey, it says right here, you're supposed to, you didn't have it. You know, that's good in court. And we have some fun. But that doesn't really challenge the fundamental that they get this information to begin with. You know, I don't want to fight him with technicalities. I want him over the head with a, you know, 2x4 on principle. Okay. So what is the principle involved here? They're coming out and they're saying, we have this form. Let's assume they had the right ink on it. All right. You're obligated to answer this because what? We say so? I mean, they're doing this necessary proper thing. They're, you know, why are they doing this?
Well, again, as you talked about earlier, it's all about the money. And certainly a lot of this information is used by corporations to do marketing research and a number of things that don't really seem to be constitutionally mandated. Again, there's where the necessary and proper clause comes in. So again, it's important to know how to respond to these things.
Okay, now wait, before, now I know you, we got 2 hours, you'll get your thing in, Dan. Man, he's all, he's got all this law stuff, so get a pen and paper, because he cannot help himself to give you names of cases and dates and sites and all this kind of stuff that, you know, oh man, drives me crazy. But, all right, the point that I'm trying to make in this whole thing is that they are always going to come up with some kind of something in law and constitution interpretation of and say, yes, we get to have this. But why? Why do they want this stuff? Why? What possible use is this to the government? It's not the government. It's corporation. If you go to, I give you an example, and you can look at this later. Maybe I'll put a link on it in today's archive. You go to the top of Freedom's Phoenix, and you'll see the horizontal navigation bar. This is front page, archive, you know, search, all this kind of stuff. And one of those on the second line towards the right, it says special editions. Now, these are just like copies of Freedom's Phoenix that individuals have for, like, Ed has it for The Revolution Continues, and Duggar has one for It's Not My Dad, and I have one that says Ernie's Favorites. Pal has one, Fascist Nation, you know, that kind of stuff. Ernie's Favorites, you go in there, and there's a couple of things in there really give you up for. I'll leave them in there so it's easy reference, and it's called The Power of Nightmares, and it's called The Century of Self. These are two BBC specials that they did. The Century of Self was how they used Freudian study. I mean, his nephew was here or something. They took all this Freudian and how people are all motivated by, I don't know, cleavage or something, okay? And what they did is they turned America intentionally into a commercial entity, into a consumeristic society, into you have to have the better Thunderbird than your neighbor, okay? You got to have the Mustang. You got to have, I mean, they turned us into consumers. Part of that effort, part of that ability to do it, part of it where they market Colt 45 liquor, okay, is the census. They needed this information. Well, now they have it. They just don't have all of it. And, you know, if you can get the taxpayers to fund them doing the marketing research for you and put it one place, well, even better. Don't ever think that this is nothing more than corporate America using your tax dollars to get as much information on you as possible. And in addition, there are some people that take this information and we got cattle cars for you. Okay? So this is you know what the motivation is? Follow the money. Now they'll do all kinds of rationalizations of how and why and everything, and you know that's all very interesting. But you know, I'll let Dan go ahead and go here, but he's going to get all this about how and their authority and how you can defend against and all that, and that's just a distraction in my opinion. I want to know why they're doing this, what they're doing with the information, and what happens if you say I don't want to play. All right? I'm going to let Dan go. You got, you know, like 6 minutes, man, ramble on, get it in there.
Well, what happens is if you don't answer, if you refuse to answer, you can be penalized $100 for each question. And in the Morales case, there was a gentleman named Van Fleet who had four other people in his household, and it was the long form of the census, 53 questions plus 33 for each additional person. That fine would have been $15,000. So there is a real risk to your finances in not answering these questions. So you've got a choice, basically. You can either not answer the questions and then be a defendant, or you can do as Morales did and Van Fleet, and they sued as plaintiffs. And they sued on the issue of, well, this is an invasion of my privacy. However, the courts ruled that it was not an invasion of privacy. Again, they cited the necessary and proper clause. So again, it's important to know what arguments are not going to work, and you have to make that decision. Are you going to be a defendant or a plaintiff? So these arguments as a plaintiff have not been working, so I think that's why it's important to know what your defensive arguments are going to be. So you've got the Paperwork Reduction Act, which means they've got to cite the OMB number and give you a notice of that. There's also the Privacy Act notice, which says any time the government asks you for information, they need to cite their authority to ask that information, for what purposes it will be used, and any penalties for not giving that information. So you can turn around and answer a question with a question. Then there's also under the census statutes a provision that says that the government is required to go to other federal government agencies or state agencies or even private businesses to get this information first before they make a direct inquiry of the citizen. That's a very important provision to know about.
Get what information for? Oh, they had to be able to get somewhere else before they ask the people.
Exactly. For all those additional questions besides the first question of how many people are living at your particular residence.
Well, a lot of times it said they just want you to do it anyway or catch you in a lie or what. They just, you know, you make enough laws, everybody's a criminal.
Right. Now, then there's also the Dietrich case, which was an Iowa Supreme Court case back in 1916. And the court concluded in that case that there had to be a statute requiring the particular question that they were going to ask. So it's basically comes down to an issue of what is your statutory authority to ask this particular question? So in other words, you're being asked these questions, turn around and ask a question back. Well, what's your authority to ask this question? What requires me? What's the penalty for not providing that answer? Now, some people have suggested that if they're going to ask these questions and the census person comes to your door after two questionnaires have been mailed and you didn't answer, and then they start asking questions, some people have suggested, well, why don't you just say, well, are you going to give me my Miranda rights? Well, again, this is why it's important to know how the courts have ruled. In the Morales case, Morales did not cite that he was in fear of incrimination by answering those questions. And even if he had, what the government would come back and argue is that there's a provision for confidentiality under the census. So even though you answer those questions, it cannot be used in any legal proceeding subsequent to that. So that is their argument. They're going to say, well, there's no fear of incrimination because by statute, it already says it's confidential. Again, however, you've got the fact that the census from 1930 and 1940 was used to incarcerate the Japanese Americans during World War II. So in addition to that, the Morales case also cites the fact that even though this information is confidential, the fact that we have the World Wide Web available to us now, there's no guarantee that that information is going to remain confidential. And an example they cite is when the FBI files got hacked into and the information in the FBI files got disseminated over the World Wide Web. So there is...
Got hacked in by who? People? The NSA? The Obama? I mean, what?
Right.
So, once it gets out, they go, hey, you know, it got out. No, we're so sorry. You know, sue us. Oh, I'm sorry. You can't sue us. So, I mean, this is, I understand the mechanics of it. They're going to do it. You go, hey, man, I'm not for doing this. And I'll tell you, it's just like the tax thing. If you're not doing it, yeah, okay, let it slide. We got other resources we can put to get more answers from everybody else. But if you're advocating not doing it, oh, you're root of a grapevine. We got to take care of you. All right.
Well, that's an interesting point that you raise, Ernie, because there was a case, a gentleman named William Steele, who he and three or four other individuals had a census dissident group. And they publicly got on the radio and they made public appearances where they were protesting the census and advocating that people not answer those questions. It turned out that the government came back and criminally charged those individuals, and they were convicted. But the interesting point was that what Steele did was he went around and gathered information, the names of other people who also refused to answer those census questions, and of course they weren't criminally charged. So the issue was, who are the people that the government came after to charge criminally? And it was people who exercised their First Amendment right. The Court of Appeals reversed that conviction because they were engaged in First Amendment activity.
Oh, but that didn't stop them from getting charged.
Right.
Oh, heck no. You know what they say? IRS, they said, how are you going to answer all these questions about this stuff? They go, enforcement. We'll be at your front door with a gun. That's how it works. Well, what's your defense? I don't know. Know the truth. We'll be right back with some more.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
What's wrong with the world, mama? People living like they ain't got no mamas. I think the whole world's addicted to the drama. Only attracted to things that'll bring the trauma. Overseas, yeah, we trying to stop terrorism. But we still got terrorists here living in the USA, the big CIA, the Bloods and the Crips and the KKK. But if you only have love for your own race, then you only leave space to discriminate. And to discriminate only generates hate. And when you hate, then you're bound to get irate. Yeah. Madness is what you demonstrate, and that's exactly how anger works and operates. Man, you gotta have love just to set it straight. Take control of your mind and meditate. Let your soul gravitate to the love, y'all, y'all.
People killing, people dying, children hurt and you hear them crying. Can you practice what you preach, and would you turn the other cheek? Father, 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 help us, send some guidance from above. These people got me questioning.
Oh, we got you some love right here. Yes, Dan Kuhnkopf, Ernest Hancock got some love here. You know, the Black Eyed Peas, this is a song that was recorded back in, I think, 02, 03. And they just had a concert here this last week, and my daughter went. And this is a popular band. They have a lot of this kind of stuff. And she's thought of the show. I mean, you know, she's been helping and everything. She's like, oh, it's a love thing. It's a love thing. Dad, you got to listen. Well, of course, I've heard this song before and so on, but we made some cuts out of it and everything, how we can use the continuation of the popularity of the concept of love. This is, you know, it's been going on for a long time. I mean, there's always something, you know, you got different songs from different eras. You know, then we got Huey Lewis in the news. You know, there's all kinds of stuff that's been, you know, it's always about the power of love. Give peace a chance. All you need is love. This is where we are. We need to make sure that people understand that there is a powerful thread of humanity, and you cannot have love without truth. I mean, if you're lying to somebody, how much you love them, you know, and usually you're going around looking for the smiles. And that'll be cool. You know, you have a lot of, you know, we're having some fun. So this is, that's why, you know, and I've known Dan Gutenkopf for a long time, and he's all about the love, you know. So we you know, he challenges. He didn't go out and get all Harry Carey and all freaking out, waving arms. He deals with legislators. He talks to them. He's like, look, here's the law. This is what it says. You're all about taking your oath seriously and the law, right? So we got a short segment here. Tell me a little bit about, you know, have you gotten positive feedback from legislators by just telling them the truth? How often does that happen? Are they usually like, I don't want to know the truth? That makes it complicated.
Well, there's some legislators that are receptive to the truth, but then, of course, you've got other governmental agencies that don't want to deal with the truth. And so there's always that resistance and special interest. So just because you communicate to a legislator what the truth is, you're still fighting that battle with the legislative process and all the politics that goes on with the different committees, the judiciary committees and so forth.
Yeah, now tell me real quick, are these committees, all this process is to accomplish what? Is it, you know, better defense of my rights? Is it, you know, to make sure bad laws don't get through? Or is it there to camouflage bad laws? I mean, what is the process for?
Well, again, the whole purpose of government is to protect our rights. That's the only purpose of government, is to protect our rights. But again, we see increasingly with these special interests that come in and pass laws. For instance, the foreclosure issue that a lot of people are struggling with right now. It appears that several years ago, the banks went in and drafted legislation to allow these non-judicial foreclosure laws to come into place, to where the banks can just come in and publish a notice of sale without having to take somebody to court. So again, this legislative process can be used by the bad guys to take away our rights.
It's always used by the bad guys. It's used by who else? Because the legislators only understand two things, pleasure and pain. I don't have enough competition with the pleasure.